I'm Laura Harper Lake.
And I'm Sarah Reitzman, and you're listening to Creative Guts.
Hey, listeners, thanks for tuning in to Creative Guts.
Today we're talking with Bianca Morales. Her name may sound familiar to our listeners since I gushed about the mural she did in downtown Rochester in an installment of Creative Catalogs.
Bianca is a painter, muralist, and sculptor living in Rochester, New Hampshire. I've been following her on Instagram now for a while, and I think her work is just heavenly.
It was Bianca's Space Moose that obviously caught my eye, but I'm really excited about all of her art, so let's just jump right into this episode with Bianca Morales.
Welcome so much, Bianca, to the podcast.
Oh, thank you. It's exciting to be here.
Laura and I have both been following you on Instagram ever since the whole, like, moose mural thing.
Yeah,
space put moose. Put us on. Yeah, Space Moose. I love that. Put us on your... You on our radar. So we're really excited to get to talk to you.
Your work is stunning.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I love seeing it in my Instagram feed every day.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I feel like it's so rare. I don't know anything about art, so I don't know what I'm talking about. So you can take everything I say with a grain of salt. But I feel like it's so rare to see like murals with so much like black and dark color in them, and it's really, really nice. Like you're using like there's black in there and there's dark purples in there, and then there's like some vibrant like neon colors. It's really awesome. Just don't see a lot of that, but maybe that's New Hampshire too.
Yeah, I've heard that the color scheme was a bit unconventional for the region. One of the comments on the Fosters posted an article about the mural, and this guy put, "What is this, Rochester, New Mexico?" And I was like, "Thank you." I was so flattered that you would incorporate me with the Southwest, because that's where I'm from. And if it shows in my work, I'm going to be unapologetic about it. You know,
that's
I can't help it.
That's awesome. Yeah, really.
I painted a moose for y'all. I don't paint moose, but it means something to the region. So if it's public art, it should relate to the people who experience it.
And I personally don't want to see a moose that I've seen 100 times, with the, vibe of New England, where it's sort of old fashioned and traditional and more representational. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love seeing a beautiful space moose that's something refreshing. Yeah. I haven't seen this here yet. Yeah. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah, I paint a lot of space stuff.
I do too.
I noticed. Very therapeutic having this to look at right now.
Oh, good.
Love it.
I love outer space. I'm a wicked space cadet, so I feel like we're on the same wavelength there.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things.
And it must be a beautiful sky down in the Southwest, too. Gosh,
it is.
Yeah.
Yep. Big, vast skies.
So let's start super simple and just talk a little bit about like your craft, what different mediums you work in, and a little bit more about your style.
Okay. Well, my favorite medium is oil paint.
Nice.
Because it dries slow. And I have a slow processing. I mean, especially if I, like one of my favorite things to do is classical anatomy. Because I'm classically trained.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd like to say my ultimate goal as an artist is to do Mesoamerican subject matter through a classical style.
Wow, that is fascinating.
So, like, I love all the ancient Aztec, like, codices, all of their... And it's very 2D.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, free game to interpret that through the classical lens. One of my favorite artists who did that in the early 1900s, his name was Saturnino Herrán, or Saturnino Herrán. It's a lot of my work to say it properly. He was an artist in Mexico, and he actually trained in New York. He would do a lot of classical interpretations of Mesoamerican men. And he died in his late 20s. He died when he was like 29.
Oh, wow.
So he has this beautiful portfolio. And then it just stops.
Oh,
devastating. He's
so
the
sad.
Love of my life. I love him so much. So I feel like my ultimate goal is just to continue that in that direction. But I also want to be a muralist, so I can't paint big Aztec men in New England. It's just probably not going to work out.
Who's stopping you? What, why not?
Yeah, well, so like I said, I the moose was a good example for me to be true to myself in this style. But also, you got to meet your audience halfway.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do murals, you've got to, do something that means something to everyone else, not just you. And if I still lived in Texas, I could... It's just where you are. The subject matter is going to vary a little bit, but I mean, it also depends on the project. Like right now I'm working in Boston at the YMCA. We went to an orchestra in Boston because my daughter plays the violin. And so we were going to a supermarket in the Latin part of town to find menudo because you can't find it up here in New England.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And then I saw these old murals of like Frida Kahlo and they're really faded. I was like, oh my gosh, someone should redo those.
Yeah.
So I was like hunting down like who to contact about that wall in that Latin part of town. And then I had to like send emails twice because people just ignore you.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I was like resending it. So I finally got in touch with the coordinator there. And, you know, the dominant population there is like Dominican. A lot of Central and South American immigrants are there.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, it looks like I could do my subject matter, you know?
Yeah.
So I get to paint Aztec stuff right now in Boston. I'm working on a mural over there.
That's really cool.
That must be really fulfilling.
It is. Oh my gosh. It really is. Like I started this past weekend and there's this group of kids and we set up the wall towards like a giant coloring book page. Like just color in the black lines.
What is it like to do that, especially to do a piece that size? And especially if you think back about like the first time you did it, how do you transfer like this idea that you have that's, you know, a regular size painting to like a really big space?
Yeah, it's amazing. I think the first mural I did was with my art students in Texas. Now, I've never done it completely by myself because I was teaching art in Texas. I taught fifth and sixth graders, and one of my best friends, Jeremiah Peters, he owns an art gallery and bar, and he also bought this like broken down building and wanted to turn it into like a community garden. So we put up some plywoods on the wall, and he was like, "You want to paint?" I was like, "Yeah." So I just got to paint with my students on his wall. That was my first mural. I did another mural that was sponsored by the local state hospital. They gave us grant money to paint a mural. So me and my students, we painted a huge wall over like the 2 month summer break.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So I kind of miss being an art teacher because you can really have that time in the summer to just paint all day.
Yeah. And what is it like, I'm thinking about painting a mural, and I say this because I was walking around downtown Rochester and Rachel Carpenter was out there finishing up her mural, and we all started like talking to her and asking her questions, and I was like, this must be so annoying when you're trying to get your mural done and people are watching it happen sort of live and asking you questions or maybe like critiquing it before it's done. What is it like sort of doing a painting in front of a live audience?
For me, it was fun because when I moved to Rochester, I've noticed some of the negative language people use, and I don't think they see how they're perpetuating like a negative feedback loop. They're hurting their own community when they talk negatively about their own town. But that happens a lot in the U.S. I mean, the town I was from, they had a small town stigma they would associate with themselves as well. But it was nice to see people walk up and be like, oh, this is awesome. Oh, wow, you're brightening up the space, you know. They were really excited about it and receptive towards it. And so it was awesome. It was encouraging to me to know that I was helping contribute some positivity towards Rochester.
That's so beautiful. And I love that it was sort of a New Hampshire-themed mural, but in your very, like, different, you know, style.
Mm-hmm.
And brightened up the community of Rochester. Really cool.
Yeah.
Bianca, what was it like painting your first public mural? It is something I have daydreamed about doing, and I've painted murals privately, but I have never done it publicly, and it scares me.
Really?
It scares me. I'm afraid of f***ing up in front of the public and looking like I don't know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, you know, when you first experiment or try something in the studio, nobody's around to see you make a mess or have to do it 17 times.
Mm-hmm.
What was your first mural? Where was it? And what were you feeling at the time?
Okay, that plywood I did with my students on my friend's building. Well, first of all, it was definitely more comfortable because it was a good friend.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me creative freedom. He wasn't critical. And we shared a common vision and values. So that was a significant factor. But I know the fear you're talking about, like, especially because my first one was like a profile view of a girl. And so I had to do like serious, like, the more challenging work for me is skin.
Yes.
So I was nervous. And I didn't let my students touch that part. They could do all the solid colors.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. I was nervous, but I guess I just assured myself, I will do this 30 times to get it right. I mean, that's the only comfort I can give myself. Like, I'm going to work on this skin until, I don't care if it takes 50 layers of paint. That's just how I comfort myself. And it is vulnerable.
Yeah.
I just feel very, like the mural I'm doing in Boston right now, I spent like an hour on an arm. Just like right here. And I couldn't get it right. And I was so mad. But, and you know, like I said, like they're going to go into the building tomorrow and see that it's kind of awkward. But I just have to tell myself I'm going to go get it right.
Keep hitting it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the process of a mural, you know, depending on the size, there's a lot of physicality to it as far as being up high, stepping back constantly to see the full, you know, what's kind of the step-by-step process from conception to completion?
I definitely do it digitally.
Oh, okay.
I draw it up digitally in the comfort of my home, sitting on my laptop or tablet. It's very nice.
That sounds lovely.
Not labor intensive. I don't know about you guys, but I love sitting down and drawing.
Yeah, me too.
It's nice. So yeah, I'll do it up digitally every time. And then I'll put it on Photoshop onto the building to do a rendering for the proposal.
Yep.
And then I have a projector. And I project it onto the wall.
That makes a lot of sense.
That's super cool. Yeah.
I don't have time to worry about scale on that size. I have another job and I can't. And it, like I said, it's a good opportunity to have the kids help, because if it's an outline, they can just go in and color it.
Yeah.
So I have my own projector now.
Does the projector work in, you know, on the outside of a building in the daytime? Is that still pretty?
No.
No?
Evening or night. Night tracing.
That's really cool. So, like, the Muse mural was started at night, or did you always do it just at night?
It started at night.
Yeah.
And then we'll paint during the day, evening hours. It's hard to stare at a white wall in natural light and paint, because it's just so harsh. You can't do it like midday.
That's so cool. I'm selfishly picking your brain because I want to take that leap someday. Mm-hmm. And I've been talking with someone and collaborating. Talking about collaborating in a mural in Manchester, maybe.
Yeah.
And so I'm very inspired by you.
Well, you get to develop it in the safety of your home, and you get to do process of elimination, and you can, like right now I'm developing a design for Matt Wyatt because I get to paint in his community center.
Oh, nice.
And I'm so intimidated because I just don't want to let him down because, like I said, he's my favorite New Englander.
I love that you just whispered that. I did.
Talking into it, yeah.
Yeah, but it's okay. I heard he doesn't listen to this podcast.
But like my best friend Isaac, he's my co-collaborator. Mm-hmm. He lives in New York City, so he's always around murals, and so I'll have him as a safety to share my ideas and develop. So it's developed in a safe place, and then when I'm comfortable enough, that's when it goes on the wall.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, and someone's imagining approved it, so you also have the confidence of someone backing you who's funding or pushing the project.
Yeah, but like, you know, you said yourself, you've had to redo something 17 times.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people don't understand about art. They think that you just do it and it's easy. I've spent 20 hours on a figure trying to figure it out. And, you know, it's just, when you look at two paintings, you don't know who had to work harder to get there.
Yeah.
You just see the work. You know,
and that the Space Moose was commissioned by Bernier Insurance, which is neat because they've been a business in Rochester for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. How much did they sort of care about what you were painting, or were they just like, we want this artist, like, here's some money?
Yeah, I'll tell you how that happened. It was really interesting. So I was really frustrated because I didn't get to do a mural in Alabama. I lived in Alabama for a year after I left Texas. I left Texas right when I was doing murals for my town, just strong momentum with networking and resources to paint and teach, and I left. So I was grappling with the fact that I left and I had to start over. And I didn't get to paint in Alabama. I tried to do a mural. It didn't work out. So I just decided, you know what? I'm going to develop a postcard mural, and then I'll find someone who wants to let me do it. So I didn't know anything about Rochester, so I posted on the Facebook page, you know, you're from Rochester, if something.
Yes.
I've seen it. And I just said, hey, you guys, you know, I'm trying to develop a postcard mural. Can you let me know, like, what would be meaningful for you to see on that? Like, what's the iconography that matters to you? Because I don't know, you know? Mm-hmm. And Troy Dillo with Burn Your Insurance, he messaged me and he's like, hey, I've got a wall you can paint on. And I was like, okay. So I seriously got up and drove to the wall to look at it, like, right then, because I was so excited. You know what I mean? Like, people have walls. They only have a few walls. Yeah. And they're going to let you paint on one? It's a high honor.
It is.
We don't have a lot of walls. Like, you know?
It's not like you could just tear it down and build some more. Like, it's there.
Oh, my gosh. It's their property. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
And so I was like, yeah, I'll do it. And I was, you know, sad to tell him, I'm sorry, but this isn't big enough for the postcard mural. But I'd love to draw up something for you. Mm. So I sent him a bunch of my work, and then he said he'd get back with me. And so I was like, you know what? I just need to make a proposal. So I just did the space mural, the space moose, and then I sent it to him, rendered on the wall. And he was like, okay, let's do it. I was like, all right. Cool.
I love it when people say yes.
I know. He was just so open
and
receptive. And the building is vacant, too. So I think he just wanted something to happen to space. And that's when I met Matt, because Matt came with Troy to the meeting to set it up. And Matt, I was just so excited to meet Matt. Matt was so supportive throughout the whole project. I mean, he posted on it on social media. And he even gave me the little plaque. There's a little informational plaque on the mural that has my name. And he put my background and my Instagram and Burn Your Insurance.
That's really cool.
I was really encouraged by how receptive and eager the community was to help facilitate something like that to happen.
Yeah. So I already knew that we needed more people like Matt in this world, but like, I'm thinking we need some more people, like some more business people like Troy Dillo. Like, that's so cool.
Yeah. He's one of the main sponsors. Burn Your Insurance is one of the main sponsors to the RMFA.
Yeah.
And I point that out every chance I get, because you're right. I mean, it has to be a network of support.
Absolutely. And what a nice lesson in just sort of like putting yourself out there on the Facebook page. Hey, I want to do a mural.
Yeah.
What's up, guys?
We have a meeting in Portland, November 19th, with the Salvation Army, one of their headquarters, for the postcard mural on the back of the Salvation Army store in Rochester.
Cool.
So I have a design for that. And it's awesome because I've only lived here for a year, but I have like so many connections now. I'm officially a member of the Arts and Culture Commission. And then like the RMFA, you know, Matt's letting me use him to back up support for the project. Lisa Stanley with the Rotary Club, Jess Clay with Make Rochester Great, and I have a list of high schoolers from Spalding who are going to help with the project.
Oh, that's great. You're making awesome stuff and inspiring the youthful artists coming on up after you. You know, that's really great.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, I drew up that design sitting on my couch watching Netflix. Like,
yeah.
So I felt really safe when I was making it. And it's another nice merging of my style and local iconography.
Mm-hmm.
I hope the meeting goes well.
That's really exciting.
We're going to look forward to that. That is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jess Clay and Lisa Stanley, they're both two people in Rochester who, Jess Clay is the one who curated the B mural.
Yeah.
Lisa Stanley has done a lot for the police in Rochester. They're both eager to help get funding and make it happen. Lisa Stanley's like, don't worry about funding. I've got this. Like, she knows how to raise thousands of dollars. And Jennifer Daly at the Spalding High School, she's very excited about getting her students involved. She had me go speak with them a few weeks ago. And I met a little girl who wants to major in art therapy.
Aww.
And she's like, now you've got me thinking about murals. And I was like, maybe you can do murals with your art therapy, you know, members. And that can be a part of their
Because the process is incredibly therapeutic. I was actually just speaking to a relative who lost someone and talking about how art could really be a helpful tool, especially with murals. I feel like a lot of times in the past, you know, I say, and I've had people say to me, it's not the product, it's the process. But I feel like with murals, part of the therapy could be the product as well. Like confidence and the pride in what you accomplished, like the physical accomplishment. That's huge.
Yeah, and I think it's a great thing to give to kids.
Yeah.
That they helped make something like that for their community on that scale, because art, there needs to be a facilitated connection between art and the community.
Yes.
A lot of people don't go to galleries, don't, you know, and that's what Matt is in his description or something. The RMFA is a facilitator between, you know, art and the community. You know, and I just think that's great. I think some of my favorite memories are painting with my students outside.
Yeah. Oh.
Like even the kids yesterday, you know, they're like, I'm so relaxed.
Yeah.
I was like, yes, this is the therapy of my life.
Yeah.
As much as I am an artist, I am very politically and socially involved. Art having social utility matters to me. It's not just, it's okay if art is just self-indulgent, and there are phases of my life where it is, but it's really important for it to have social utility.
What did you know about Rochester before you moved there? Because I feel like you are such a perfect fit in Rochester, mm-hmm. given what you just said, that it just feels like either it's a really wonderful coincidence or you like knew this already.
I moved up here just for the shipyard. My brother is an engineer at the yard. I didn't know anything about Rochester. He was just living there. And I love and admire my brother. So I was like, I need to redirect my life. Help me redirect my life. So I just trusted him to move up here and work at the shipyard. So I didn't know anything about Rochester. It reminds me a lot of my hometown, where our downtown needed people to do things. And I was a part of what was going on there.
Yeah.
I was friends with a local gallery owner, my friend Jeremiah, and his drive to do things. And it feels very like natural, grassroots. I like being part of something grassroots.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was very homesick and I missed being a part of that. And it's nice to be a part of something like that again.
Yeah. I feel kind of like sad for Big Spring and like their loss, but I'm so glad you're here now.
Yeah, thank you. And you know, the funny thing is I went back to Big Spring and did a mural 3 months ago. My friend Jeremiah let me paint at his building.
That's super cool.
I painted a big mural in like 2 days. It was very painful.
Yeah, that's painful. A quick turnaround.
Yeah, it's very painful.
Are you open to mural commissions all across the country? Are you open to traveling to places? Oh my
God, that would be a life dream.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Nice.
I know that's the thing. Like, you know, I'm a mom and I have to look at life very practically. There's only a certain extent I'll allow myself to be a broke artist mm-hmm. because I have to dedicate to a lot of my time in my life right now to helping my daughter.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I work for the government. That's not very exciting, but I'm okay with that because I do things outside of work to still develop my career mm-hmm. as an artist. And I just know over time, all these connections and these experiences, you know, maybe one day it can be a full-time job, but I'm just learning right now. And it's like a part-time job outside of work, but it doesn't feel like work.
I know exactly what you mean.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I'm totally okay with not having it as my full-time job right now because I know I'm working towards things, I'm doing things. It's how I cope.
Yeah, yeah. And what are the sort of different ways that you've taken advantage of like monetizing your art? So in addition to the murals, sort of other ways to start that process of maybe turning it into a career eventually?
I'm figuring that out. And I've sold a lot of work. I hate selling work.
The process of selling or letting it go?
Letting it go.
Really? Yeah.
I don't like it because I do big pieces that take a lot of time and I don't make a lot of it because it takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
And now I miss them and I wish they were with me so I could have like a show.
Yeah.
But they're all over the country and it's sad. So I'm figuring out the practical side of it. I really don't know. I think that's something I need to figure out. It's hard to feel down on yourself. Like, why haven't I made art a career? Why didn't I think this through? There's honestly some national statistics out there that make you feel like you're part of a generation who are having a hard time figuring that out. Millennials are at historic lows for entrepreneurship.
Wow.
Yeah, because we just don't have the same financial opportunity. I mean, it's like a 50% chance for a millennial to do better than their parents.
Yeah.
Whereas for our parents, they had like a 90% chance to do better than their parents.
Yeah, that's really sad.
And about 30 to 40% of liberal art grads are misemployed or underemployed. So we're just in a weird transition right now. I mean, I know there's art jobs out there.
Yeah.
But I mean, I just have to be real. A lot of us are having a hard time figuring out how to do that and have health insurance and a pension. It's weird to navigate being romantic and being afraid of being old without health insurance.
Yeah. I worry a lot about our generation when we retire, whether or not like we have anything saved up for retirement or if we're all just kind of screwed.
Yeah, so how do you be an entrepreneur and how do you do all that? It's just, I don't know how to figure it out. But that's why I said it would be like if my art grad program had some business classes or more economics or, you know, more the more practical side of it, you know?
Yeah.
And we need to tell kids today, like, you need to look into really researching how you're going to use your degree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have an art degree and an English degree. I'm not really using them right now because I quit teaching. But at the shipyard, last week was the first week I got to do graphic design all week at work.
How so exciting.
Yeah, so I'm hoping I can do that more. It's like heaven, you know. Just,
yeah. Being able to utilize your creativity in your day job.
Yeah, like I was drawing submarines. It's not my subject matter, but I was working in drawing submarines.
Yeah,
space submarines.
Right.
So spaceships, basically.
Yeah. I'm now going to go into the direction of military insignia. I just feel like, no.
Well, we're going to set you up with Chris Duffy at the REDC, the Regional Economic Development Center. Mm-hmm. He is, I think I mentioned to you earlier, he's a business advisor, and he provides free business advice for folks. And so who knows? He could maybe help you on a path to try to get you, you know, thinking more of entrepreneurship and give advice in that direction.
Yeah, that's the thing, man. You know, I'm just so grateful. Like, I've made connections here in New England, and I'm just learning and, like, meeting people. Like, you telling me that today, like, that's so exciting.
Yeah.
It's just there's just resources to be tapped into, and it's just figuring out how. That's why I love meeting people like you guys and, like, Matt and, like, Lisa Stanley. Like, there's money to be found to go towards the arts.
But you have to be gutsy enough to go after it.
Yeah.
And that's the other part of our podcast. You know, we focus a ton on the creativity. And I think the underbelly of it all is that you need to have the drive and the, you know, the gutsiness, the vulnerability, like you mentioned before, to put yourself out there and be like, I can make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
Someone give me money to do it.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like a part of it, the struggle I've had lately is like you know, there's no longer a village for you to compare yourself to. You have to compare yourself to the whole world. And that's something everyone is having a hard time grappling with in our day and age. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's like a part of me wanted to not do murals until I was as good of an artist as I want to be. And I was like, wait, no, you need to do it now.
Yeah.
You can grow as an artist and you can grow as a muralist.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. There's sort of like a lot to unpack here because I'm thinking about like I can relate to the temptation of getting out of school and having a lot of debt and being like, maybe I should work at like a soul-sucking corporate job for just a little bit to like pay off those loans and put some savings away and whatever. And so it really is we sort of created a hard place for people to do something that's more gutsy and more true to what they love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird space to navigate. And it's timeless. It's timeless. Van Gogh, you know, about all these artists, you know, they just struggled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thought of having a creative, like when you do reach the point of getting a creative day job, the struggle is maintaining creativity outside of that and maintaining creativity within that. I'm a graphic designer at my job. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, I don't know how to articulate this. I think about this all the time, though. Sometimes I get a stroke of inspiration from something, but it wouldn't have happened unless something else had happened. It's all kind of a domino effect.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I'm working for a client and I don't have an idea and I just procrastinate a ton. But if you have a deadline, you can't do that.
Yeah.
You have to produce creativity, and producing creativity on a deadline for someone else and not your own passion or drive can be very tough. And sometimes I procrastinate a ton, and then I see something and it strikes me, and then I create something quite wonderful. And then it's like, oh, I was meant to procrastinate so that then I could have it all happen.
Yeah.
But what do you do with that when you have a job and you need to, you know?
Yeah. You remind me a lot of a TED talk by Elizabeth Gilbert. You know Elizabeth Gilbert, the writer of Eat, Pray, Love?
Yes.
It's kind of like you feel like, and it goes into the whole notion of free will about how you're kind of at the mercy of your thoughts and what comes to you. Mm-hmm. So that's why a lot of ancient cultures kind of, you know, personified it as like this deity who would just flow around and gift people with ideas. And, you know, and then at some point it transitioned to like in Western civilization, like the self.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're completely responsible for your own. There's just some kind of gap between you and what comes to you.
Yeah.
It's stressful.
Because it's not set on a timer, and you don't know when you're going to think of a great idea. Like, oh, I shouldn't worry. Next Tuesday, I'm going to have a genius idea. Like, it doesn't happen like that. So
it's hard. It's stressful.
Yeah.
Like right now, I'm in the weird place of thinking of an idea for Matt. And then there's another potential project. And then there's another one. And so I'm just, like, backlogged on creativity. It's like, oh, man, I just really wish, like, the creative gods would just send down this. Like, what do I got to do?
Instead of a rain dance, you do a creativity dance. Come on.
You say a little, like, prayer to the creative gods.
Or you're looking at an art magazine, and then all of a sudden you make a few connections, and then boom, you know.
Yeah.
There's a book by, I need to know his name. It's called Art is Theft by Austin Kleon. He's an author out of Austin, and he just talks a lot about making an amalgamation of different sources.
I need to read that.
You do.
That sounds awesome.
I need to reread it.
I'm going to check that out because I was actually just talking to my husband about another podcast idea, and I was like, well, that doesn't sound very original. He's like, there are no original ideas. Yep. It's just reforming things and making it your own, but you're still going to take, you're not going to invent a new genre.
Mm-hmm. No. Right.
You're not going to do it.
Right.
That's why I think my safest, freest space is reinterpreting Aztec art through a classical framework because it hasn't been done a lot. So when I get the time to do it, I'm going to do it. If it was my full-time job, I would do that all day long.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Thanks. Hopefully it'll happen one day, you know. And that's the balance, like my personal work and then like my mural work. It's like, it's weird trying to make space for both.
And here's a quick word from our sponsors.
Bonjour, Vinny, my dear friend. You look très sad.
Well, Claude, I've lost my inspiration and artistic motivation. I need to find a place that could give me joy.
Say no more. In my humble opinion, Art of Front Street Studios and Gallery in Exeter, New Hampshire, is the best place to find colorful and divine artwork. Have you heard of it?
No, but I'm all ears. What is this place of wonder you speak of?
It is a collection of 9 artists who have a gallery and studio in the building with a flower mural on it. And you know how I love flowers. You can walk amongst the artist studios, learn what inspires them, and if you're so inclined, purchase a whole variety of work, including paintings, prints, cards, sculptures, fabrications, jewelry, and even more.
I feel happy? Joy? Alive? Just hearing about Art of Front Street has rejuvenated me. Where can I learn more?
Visit www.artoffrontstreet.com or follow them on Facebook or Instagram. They are truly a treasure to behold.
And back to the interview now.
You should see if it is a job if you typed it into Indeed, you know, like recreating Aztec art. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's the cool thing about my Instagram is that I'm a part of a whole subgroup of people who are just excited about Aztec art.
Yeah.
That's what I love about Instagram, like the power of hashtags, the power of syncing in with people who love what you love. Like I follow and connect with so many artists in like California, go figure, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of Mexicans making Aztec art. So
yeah, you're in literally like the like most irrelevant part of the United States in terms of like finding other people.
But I drove an hour and a half south and oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm doing a mural of a woman holding an Aztec mask.
That's so cool. That's really cool. Well, and I love the idea, and we actually talk about this in at least 4 other episodes that come to mind immediately, that like you are now in New Hampshire, and there is a big problem in New Hampshire with losing young people to other states that, you know, we're the number one exporter of high school graduates. So people leave New Hampshire at super high rates, and it's really scary for this state, this, you know, aging state. And there is this like small cohort of people who are like, you know, New Hampshire is missing X, Y, and Z, instead of moving and going to find it elsewhere, I'm just going to bring it here. And so you're sort of like, you know, New Hampshire's source of Aztec art now. Oh. And that's really an awesome, like, you know, tiny little niche that you fill.
Thanks. And, you know, Matt said something like that to me, too.
Of course he did.
Yeah. And that meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You share a lot on Instagram about your art and your heritage. And we've talked a little bit about that already. But tell us about how you sort of are inspired by your own heritage and your art.
Yeah, I guess we're kind of living in an age where there's an information overload. And at some point you have to ask yourself, well, if I'm a visual artist, what am I going to say? Who am I in the strata of history? And I feel like big connection of identity should be looking at yourself within the continuum of time. So I know my parents were Mexican immigrants to the United States, and I was very assimilated into American culture, but I don't know. At some point it just became important to me to, you know, ask who I descended from, what got us here. I really feel like history matters now. A lot of the socioeconomic settings didn't just pop up 30 years ago. It's evolved over centuries, and that matters. And I love the work of my ancestors, and I love the idea of merging Western and Mesoamerican cultures together. And I just also feel like the social climate of our country, there's been some stigmatization towards my people, even from the leader of my country. That was hard for me to grapple with, for him to use such derogatory terms towards my people. And I feel like even just doing this mural in Boston, you know, these kids are growing up. I met a Dominican first generation girl who was painting with me, and it meant a lot for me to have her contribute to a physical, like a materialization of positive identity. That's what we're doing in this space. We're like, it's materializing identity. And she was contributing to that. So it's kind of like a way to cope with the social climate.
Yeah.
And inject like a defense and a positive identity. Because, you know, like I said, I'm very politically involved. So it's just like this perfect merging of what I'm going through as an individual, defending my heritage and reclaiming our identity. Even when the leader of our country tries to defame our name, it means a lot to me.
Yeah.
So my favorite muralist, Diego Rivera, in the early 1900s, he would paint the mestizo people on the walls of Mexico City. Mexico was dominated by European architecture. And I don't hate Europe, okay? I love Europe. My favorite artist is, you know, Caravaggio. Like I said, it's like half Europe, half Mesoamerican, classical interpreted. He would paint the mestizo people on the walls. He used public art to reclaim their identity. He wanted the locals, the mestizos, to feel at home in their own land. He would paint the farmers. He would paint the women grounding maíz. He was defending their identity. And so that always just really stuck with me. And so I feel like Diego would be proud of me.
I have a feeling he would too.
Yeah.
You know, like I love Diego and Frida. Like, you know, they were politically involved. Mm-hmm. Their art had that social utility, and just learning about them. And when I was in high school, I was in speech and debate. I wasn't an artist in high school.
Really?
No. I did journalism and debate. That's where I learned Photoshop and graphic design and photography, but I was more into the politics. So I see how all of that shaped who I am. And I'm glad that, you know, those big revelations, I'm like living them out. I would like to do it more, but yeah, so social utility with art matters a lot to me.
Yeah.
So my Instagram, yeah, I connect with a lot of Latinos, and we just like sharing with each other, honoring our ancestors. And I think it's beautiful. Yeah. I think that because 80% of Mesoamerican people were killed because of mainly disease, and so much of our heritage was lost. And like I said, when you look at yourself in the strata of history, who am I? You see some cultures that have this huge library of their work. Like if you're from Asia, like
yeah.
You have this huge catalog of how you guys got there. And Mesoamerica, so much of it was destroyed.
Yeah.
And that's heartbreaking. And like, I'm not trying to say, I don't like when people use identity to divide themselves. Like I feel connected to Asian art because I'm a human. Mm-hmm. I feel connected to all of it. But I am sad that a lot of my ancestors' work was destroyed. It makes me sad. So yeah. I like reclaiming their voice by interpreting it from my point of view. So I think I look at my perspective as an artist from a very big macro history reference.
That was so beautifully articulated. And we talked already about sort of art being therapeutic for you, but I'm guessing that it's also therapeutic for the people who view your art, especially maybe in like a public space in New Hampshire where this is not something that they're seeing and they're not seeing themselves represented in their art. So to have you sort of, you know, being able to see themselves in somebody else's art, that's really, really beautiful.
Thanks. And that's what I really hope that we get to do, that Salvation Army mural, because it's going to be a postcard. It's going to have all this meaningful iconography from the region. And hopefully 20 high schoolers will have helped.
So cool.
So their kids in their community helped make it. It belongs to them. It doesn't belong to me. Like, it's a it'll be a collective identity. And it's like right in the center of town.
Yeah.
Smack dab.
Yeah.
In the center. So I just hope it happens.
So cool.
You are all kinds of inspiring.
Thanks.
This is like every time we interview someone with this amount of power and momentum behind them, it's just, it fuels me as an artist. You know, I might be tackling different subject matter or coming from a different place, but just your drive and your push to, and I love that you're challenging the president in that way. I love that so much. And I feel very like, I just want to go work on art after talking to you.
Yeah. I mean, that's what artists do. We're a voice in the public sphere. And you know, what I like about it is, it's a way to cope with the president without being divisive or hateful. I'm just simply trying to help Latino kids feel more confident about who they are and where they come from.
I think some artists forget they have that power, or that they could take it to another level in that realm. So it's very nice to hear.
Thanks.
And now I think we are going to downshift into rapid fire questions.
Okay.
Do you have any studio habits?
I like to play music and drink a beer while I paint.
Those are good habits.
Definitely counts.
Creating.
Or an audiobook.
Yes.
Ooh. It's heaven.
Yeah.
It's good mental activity. You know, it's just nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What kind of music are you listening to when you're painting?
Radiohead is my favorite. Chris Thiele, Brand New. Sometimes just classical, like Debussy. I don't know how to say his name. Or a lot of podcasts.
Favorite museum or exhibit you've visited?
Oh my gosh. Okay. The Dallas Museum of Art had an exhibit on Mexico. And that artist, Saturnino Herrán, who's my grandfather. I love him. Yeah. I saw his mural, Our Gods. And it was like 10 Aztec men in worship. They were worshiping. And it's like 15 feet across. I drove to Dallas twice just to go spend time with it.
Oh.
That was my favorite piece ever seeing in person, because it was spirituality. It was, and that, when you see Aztecs, you always see them sacrificing, you know. No, they were praying, they were worshiping, and that to me just, you know, represented like this collective yearning for humanity. But I saw that like as an Aztec painting, and that really just slammed me in the heart forever. So that was my favorite exhibit.
That's lovely.
But I love the MoMA. I love living close to New York. Mm-hmm. Like, I was in New York a few months ago, me and my best friend Isaac and my boyfriend and daughter, we spent all day, 2 days just in the museums. I just love living so close to the modern day Rome.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's really cool. Is there one piece of work that stands out to you as the best representation of you as an artist?
Yeah, my Saturnino Herrán study of this Aztec man. He's got a bow and arrow, and he's just so majestic and beautiful. And then there's like space in the background. Because I love Mexicans in space.
I'm in heaven. I love that.
And then I did another Saturnino study of him as one of the men from that mural. I clipped him out and painted him on canvas, and he's holding up fruit as a sacrifice to God.
That's so
cool. And to me, that was just like a form of like worship, like me honoring my ancestors and indulging the spiritual side of myself. And just those are my two most powerful pieces.
That's
awesome.
And like
I said, if I could make more of that, I would.
Sort of resisting the urge to scroll my Instagram right now and like go find them.
I know. I know. I can't wait to look. Most inspiring location you've traveled to?
I got to go to Europe in college with my art history club, my painting professor. and my painting friends. We went to southern France and Italy. I got to go to the Uffizi. And I got to see Caravaggio's Medusa. And I love Caravaggio's the first artist I fell in love with. So for me to see an original Caravaggio in Italy, like I skipped lunch just to spend like an hour staring at the paint. You know, because so you know what it's like when you get to see a painting in person. You get to really know it.
Yes.
And their, you know, their oils are, you know how it is when you're an artist. Part of you is in the piece, you know, like your oils. And I was like physically there with Caravaggio. It's just really a big deal. I adore Caravaggio. So, and also I got to walk through the fields that Vincent van Gogh walked through.
Oh.
I was outside of the asylum he stayed at. And he remedied his soul by painting in those fields.
Were you in Arles, France?
I think it was...
I've totally been to the asylum that he stayed in.
Really?
The, like, big, beautiful garden in the weird... Yeah,
you've been there?
I've been there.
Isn't it wonderful?
Yeah. It was so weird because I was... There's, like, a little gift shop right there. And, you know, you're staring at these postcards and you're like, that's here. This postcard that I'm looking at is, like, this place that I'm standing in right now. And Van Gogh did it because he was also staying here.
Yeah.
Really cool.
I recommend the Simon Sciamma documentary series, Power of Art. He has an episode on Caravaggio and Van Gogh. And I love Vincent, the way he coped with life, with art. When you read his letters to his brother Theo, you really get a window into his soul. Mm. So, being in those fields meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are much lighter, sort
very
of.
Very rapid.
After our less light questions. What's your favorite color?
Emerald green.
Ooh.
My favorite color to paint with, though, is... phthalo blue.
Love it.
Or yellow ochre.
or. You can't stop, right?
Favorite color personally is emerald green.
I love it. Favorite taste?
Spicy.
Favorite smell?
Pumpkin or cinnamon? Maybe because it's fall.
Yeah. Those are good smells, though.
It's not the first pumpkin we've gotten as an answer.
Yeah. Favorite sound?
Violin.
Favorite violin. Texture, touch.
My cat.
That's another good
one.
He's
the best. Yeah. He's the softest thing ever.
And finally, if you could go back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
That's a complicated question. I don't know, is that really small? I'd give myself a lecture.
or we could transition it. If there are young folks out there that are thinking about aspiring to be artists, what advice would you give them?
Balance the romanticism with practical.
Doesn't hurt to take a business class or two, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really prepare. How am I going to make money doing this?
Yeah.
What resources can I tap into? Business economics classes.
Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
And professors, more professors and art teachers need to be helping give those resources.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. We can't thank you enough for being on the show, Bianca. This was very inspiring. Ugh, I keep saying it. I need to find a synonym for inspiring.
Moving.
I'm just glad to have a conversation with people who love art. The best time of my life was being an art major because you were in a place where people were gathering who cared about what you cared about. They want to talk about ideas and history. And art is, you know, it's so much more than just color. It's, you know, and I love opportunities to have these conversations. I don't get to have them very often. Yeah. So
when I left art school, I felt a void
right.
for a long time. And I was in another artist collective for a bit and that helped. And then I was very, you know, isolated for a long time.
Yeah.
And then when I found art at Front Street, I've been here a year and a half or so. And it's exactly that. It's just people to talk to who get what you're, you know, feeling and inspire you in new ways. Like all the artists here inspire me in different ways. And in doing this podcast, we get to have these conversations. So we're pretty lucky. So again, thank you so, so much.
Thank you so much.
So with that,
show us your creative guts.
Thank you again, Bianca, for joining us on Creative Guts. It was such a joy to talk to you about your art.
That was such a stirring and joyful conversation. I have to say, I want to pursue painting murals a bit more now. I really appreciate how articulate and compelling Bianca was when speaking about her art and what drives her. I can't wait to see what she accomplishes next.
Me either. If you want to check out Bianca's art, and I think that you do, go follow her on Instagram. Her handle is art.biancamorellis. And as per usual, we'll have a link to that on our Facebook page, facebook.com/creativegutspodcast. Our Instagram handle is creativegutspodcast. So if you're not already there, go find us.
Yeah. And our website is creativegutspodcast.com. Thanks for tuning in to Creative Guts. We'll have a new episode for you next Wednesday. I hit record right before you said that, so there's no okie dokie. It's just the artichokey
part. Just artichokey. Her name may sound familiar to our listener since I gushed about the gorgeous Space Moose mural.
Murray? Who's Murray?
To our listener since I gushed about the gorgeous Space Moose mural.
Oh, this is such a good blooper. Oh, my God.
Gorgeous.
I can't talk today.